every day, every church and every human being is asked to answer the question, how did I treat people? How did I treat people? And I think it's fitting to ask this question as we're just about ready to enter into our season for peace and nonviolence. And you have your 64-day daily practice guide to use throughout the season. But another question to throw in there every day is to ask, how did I treat people? And we might want to tend to skip over the every day, but I don't think every day is the challenge. Because I think that whatever we believe is vitally important in life, we're willing to practice it 24/7, right? And I don't think the challenge is in saying to, you know, a church that we should ask ourselves, do we treat people? How do we treat people? Because I think churches should treat people well, right? And nor do I think the challenge is in saying that asking this question of every single human being, because as you begin to travel around the world, you begin to notice and understand that people everywhere think that every human being should treat people well. And so the challenge in this statement, every day, every church, and every human being should ask the question, how did I treat people? I believe the challenge here is in the word people, because I think it's people that give us problems, right? I mean, is there anybody in here who has ever in your entire life had any problems with people? Yeah. Teachers, you know, over the summer say, you know, they love summer because they don't have students. They say, I love teaching. It's great. But those students. And when we get together at ministerial conferences, we tend to say to each other, yeah, so how's your church? And I was stunned one time when a colleague said, it's great, except for those people. Why are you doing what you're doing if that's your attitude? But and people in business, you know, they say, how's your business going? And they say, great, except I've got to work with people. You know? So when we get down to it, I think the real challenge here is the everyday people that you and I bump into that make it difficult to answer this question, how do I treat people? And so I want you to begin to just think about and consider the kinds of people that get under your skin, that irritate you, bother you. You know, what are their characteristics? What are they like? Who are they? Because for everybody, it's going to be different. Right? Jesus said, love each other. And every great spiritual teacher and every spiritual tradition says love is the most important thing. And so, you know, this great ideal is loving everybody. I don't know if you remember years ago, we sat around and sang, we are the world, we are the people. I think Lionel Richie and Michael Jackson, I think they wrote it, I think it was about 1985. And it was to raise money. I mean, all these amazing artists got together in a studio and recorded the song. And it was for charity, and they raised millions of dollars for a famine in Africa. And so it's really easy for us to sit in our homes, in the comfort of our homes, and sing this kind of song. But it's much more difficult to help a neighbor who's just lost a job. It's much more difficult to help people in Malawi, Africa, build a well so that they can just have clean drinking water. It's a lot more difficult to help somebody who's just lost everything in a natural disaster like Katrina. And so this great ideal of loving everybody frequently hits up against reality, doesn't it? And the reality is the people you and I bump into every day. I don't know who they are for you, but I just ask you to consider who are the types of people who tend to get under your skin, to irritate you, who bother you, you know, who cause you problems. Just begin to kind of just think about that. I want to share with you a story, and it's a true story, about a young man. His name is Keith. And I'm sure many of us have had a similar kind of experience. But Keith is a frisbee golfer. Who knew? I had no idea there was anything like that. Frisbee golf. So he's a frisbee golfer, and he's also a youth minister at a church. And so he's beginning to work on his lesson, which comes from Mark chapter 2. And it's about some friends who get together and dig through the roof of a house. Now, back in Jesus' day, the roofs were thatch or straw. So they dug through the roof of a house so that they could lower their friend to Jesus so that he could be healed. And so Keith is out in the park playing however you play frisbee golf, and he's thinking about this lesson. And he's thinking about the characteristics of the kind of person that would have that much love for their friend, that they would go up on a roof, dig through it, lower the friend down to Jesus. And so he's thrown his frisbee, and he's thinking about the kind of person who would do this, and he sees a group of guys. They're about in their 20s. And they're verbally abusing and harassing the children that are around them and anybody else who passes by. And he listens to this, and he notices it, and he gets really irritated, and he gets very angry at what they're saying and doing. He gets so angry that he has to go home. He leaves the park. I'm going to finish the story in just a few moments, but I want us to understand that this kind of situation is more typical than we care to admit, that we have developed this capacity to ignore those situations that we don't want to have to get involved with. And so I just ask you to consider the kinds of people that kind of get under your skin, that irritate you, that bother you, and what are the situations that you tend to shirk away from rather than to have to deal with. Now, some people are irritated by people from another socio-ethnic heritage background. Or people are irritated by people from a different economic class. And when we see those people, we tend to not want to have anything to do with them. But notice that, you know, let's look at Jesus and the Romans. You know, at the time of Jesus, the Jews did not want the Roman people around, because what the Romans represented was the fact that Israel was not free, that they were an oppressed people, and the Roman rule, that they were dominated by Roman rule. And so I find it very interesting that, knowing this, a Roman man, a centurion, a soldier, sends a message to Jesus and says, you know, I would like you to come to my house, and I would like you to heal my servant. Now, in those days, you have to understand, you know, it helps to know a little history of the Bible, because Bill's doing that now. He's doing a Bible overview and some history of the Old Testament and then onto the New Testament. But in that time, a Jewish person would never, it was unheard of, go to a non-Jewish person's home. And so Jesus is impressed with this guy, his Roman guy, who wants him to come to his house. And so Jesus says, send this message back to your friend. Tell your friend that I'm impressed with his faith, and that because of his faith, his servant will be healed. Now here, Jesus is responding to someone with a completely different ethnic heritage. In fact, is causing ethnic problems in the land of Israel. And Jesus is responding with love and compassion. You know, we may find that there are people of different religious backgrounds that we just don't agree with. You know, we may not agree with the Baptists or the Methodists or the Roman Catholics. But Jesus was surrounded with people like this. I mean, he dealt with the Pharisees, who were absolutely focused on the Torah, and the Sadducees, who were welded to power and money. And Jesus was able to deal with these people. He was able to carry on a meaningful conversation with them, even though they didn't agree with him and he didn't agree with them. He still had this meaningful conversation. You know, and some people are irritated by people of a different political or ethical position. Ever been there? There are certain family members, I can't go there with them. We just agree that it's off the table, politics and religion. And so, but, you know, Jesus, he was surrounded by people from different, you know, different background of ethics. You know, prostitutes. You know, he would say to them, you know, there's a party tonight at Peter's house. Why don't you come over? We want to talk to you about God's love. You know, and tax collectors, you know, they were aligned with Rome and they were not very kind to Jewish people. But Jesus, seeing Zacchaeus, who was a tax collector, he had climbed in a tree so he could catch a glimpse of Jesus. Jesus knew that. And when Zacchaeus came down, he went over to him and he said, I want to talk to you. You know, so Jesus crossed all of these boundaries. You know, some people are irritated by needy people. You know, they look the other way driving by a homeless person. Some people are irritated by elderly people who don't go when the light turns green. Some people are bothered by children, by kids, you know, especially other people's kids. And some people are bothered by people of a different lifestyle or people who have marital or relationship problems. They just don't have the time for those kind of people. I hope I've spun a web wide enough to catch somebody in your life that you can say, I know who you're talking about. I know who you're talking about. You know, and so how did Jesus respond to this question of, you know, what do you do with these people who get under your skin? You know, how did Jesus respond to these people? How did he turn these people from everyday, you know, ordinary people into everyday neighbors? You know, because there's a big difference between people and neighbor, or people, or as in Twitter we say peeps, you know, ordinary peeps and everyday neighbors. There's a huge difference. And Jesus was able to treat everyone, even the person at the grocery store, people at the gas station, he was able to treat them as everyday neighbors. What was it that enabled Jesus to be able to turn everyday people into everyday neighbors? You know, because I think we can learn something from this, so we can do the same. Jesus was taught as a very young boy the Shema. Now, I don't know about you, but I have been very curious about this hanging. Have you ever wondered what this is? And so it's from our Jewish congregation that meets here on Friday nights, Bet Olive. And so just a couple weeks ago, I've been looking at this, and I said to Rabbi Tad, I said, can you tell me what this is? And how many of you know what this is? The Shema. And I had spelled it S-H-E-M-A, but Rabbi Tad emailed me back and said, no, it's S-H, whatever the guttural, you know, it's not an apostrophe, M-A, Shema. And he said it was from Deuteronomy chapter 6. And this is one of the reasons I'm doing this lesson today, because I wanted to talk about, I've just been fascinated by what this says, because it's sitting in our sanctuary every single day. And so here's what it says. Hear, O Lord. Hear, O Israel. The Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord with your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. That's the first two verses. This continues, and what it continues on is saying when you should say this prayer. You know, that Jewish people say this prayer when they get up in the morning, when they go to bed at night, when they leave the house, when they enter the house, when they stand up, when they sit down. I mean, literally, they're to say it as often as possible. And so Jesus learned this prayer as a young boy. And then later in his ministry, when a scribe who was an expert in the law asked him, what is the greatest commandment? Jesus immediately said, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. He added in, and with all your mind. and with all your strength. And then he added, the second is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. And what you can't see there is that this is from, what was it from again? Mark chapter 12. Sorry. And so Jesus joins love of neighbor as yourself with love God with every fiber of your being. I think that's fascinating, the way he kind of expanded on it to make it more inclusive. And Scott McKnight calls this the Jesus Creed. And he's written a book called The Jesus Creed, Loving God, Loving Ourselves. It's a great book, and it basically talks about turning everyday people into everyday neighbors. And so I challenge you to say this prayer every day, every night, as often as you can throughout the day. And it'll be on the website tomorrow because it's part of my thought for the week for next week. So Mary will put that on the website tomorrow. Tuesday it'll go out in our weekly e-newsletter. So you'll have it in written form. And I'm just going to encourage you for the next 30 days to say this prayer because I've been saying it and it's just, it opens you up. And it will change your life, loving yourself and loving others. Loving God, loving others. The first thing it will do is it will alert you to the everyday peeps in your life that need to be your neighbors. And all people in your life are neighbors. That's what it will remind you of. All people in your life are your neighbors. The second thing will make you realize that your job is to respond to all people as your neighbor. Everybody's your neighbor, and then you need to respond to everybody as your neighbor with love. And the third thing it will teach is that following loving God and loving others, following this Jesus Creed, that loving others can be very inconvenient. Have you noticed that? And you don't have the ability to say, come to my house, on Saturday between 10 and 12, I'm not doing anything, and then I'll help you. No, it's never convenient. It's always the wrong time. You're getting ready at work to leave for the day, at the end of the day, and somebody comes into your office. Treat them as people. You'll leave on time. Treat them as your neighbor. And you'll sit down, you'll talk to them, and they will tell you a personal story of something that's going on in their life. The difference. And so it's very challenging to take ordinary, everyday people and turn them into everyday neighbors. And how do we do this? Through love. Through love. Responding to those everyday people that you bump into with love. Responding to their need with love. Everybody, even your children, even your spouse and partner, they will respond to love. And so let's get back to the story of this young youth minister, frisbee golfer. He's about ready to leave the park, and he's angry. He's upset with these guys. He has to walk by these guys to get out of the park, and they tease him. They put him down, and he's really mad now. And he goes to his apartment, which happens to be right on the park, overlooking the park, so he's able to look out the window of his apartment, watching these guys continue, verbally abusing these kids and people, and he complains to his wife, and then finally he says, I think I'll pray. And so he sits down in prayer, and what he hears is, go to the store, get some Coke, and go give it to these guys. And so he gets up, he gets in his car, he goes to the grocery store, he comes back, he goes to the park, and he doesn't know how they're going to respond. And as he's walking towards them, the leader of the group stands up as if he's getting ready to pick a fight. And what Keith does is he reaches in the bag, he pulls out a Coke, and he says, here, I thought you might like a drink. And the first thing out of that guy's mouth was, I am so sorry for the way I spoke to you. In fact, we're sorry for the way that we've been treating the kids in the park. Now, this youth minister didn't say, "You're wrong." All he said was, "Do you want a drink?" You and I every day are going to run into these kinds of situations in our life. And we're called to respond as Jesus did, with love. Loving God and loving others. And so I encourage you to say this prayer. You know, try it out. Just try it. See what happens. Say it for 30 days, morning, night, when you get up, when you go to bed, when you come in the house, when you leave the house. You know, put on an index card, carry it around. Just see what it does. So I'd like us to say this together. Together? "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these." I'd like to end today with a paraphrase of 1 Corinthians 13. This version appeared in the South African Pioneer, which is a newspaper for missionaries. "If I have the language perfectly and speak like a native, and have not God's love for them, I am nothing. If I have diplomas and degrees and know all the up-to-date methods, and have not God's touch of understanding love, I am nothing. If I have all faith and great ideals and magnificent plans, and not God's love that serves and gives and desires to do more, I am nothing. If I give my clothes and money to them and have not God's love for them, I am nothing. If I can heal all manner of sickness and disease, but wound hearts and hurt feelings, I am nothing. If I can write articles or publish books that win applause, but fail to transcribe the word of the Christ into the language of love, I am nothing." And so every day, as we lie down to go to sleep at night, we are asked to ask ourselves this one very important question: how did I treat people today? How did I treat people today? Because if you have done great things in the world, if you've written and published books and done great deeds, but you haven't lived loving God, loving others, then the day was nothing. And so I want to ask this congregation to consider how we can reach out to our everyday neighbors in our own backyard here in Bellevue. Now, we've started. You know, the Salvation Army, we do one meal a month, but it's a very small group of people. I think three women cook and five or six people serve. We do that once a month. And we've now collecting things for the Eastside Winter Shelter, and I thank you for your generous donations. You know, and maybe we can reach out halfway around the world to Malawi, Africa. And I'm going to tell you about an outreach that I participate in Africa. You know, that we can reach out to our everyday neighbors with love and compassion and say, "Let me help you." And that we can live our lives by loving God and loving others. And so I just want to take a moment to kind of introduce you to one of my incredible outreaches that I participate in. I've been working with a gentleman, Joseph. He's 30 years old, and he's in Malawi, Africa. He was part of my congregation in Atlanta. And just to let you know where Malawi is, it's kind of the southern part of Africa. And you can kind of just off the coast, I think that's Madagascar, isn't it? But it's all landlocked. It's got a beautiful lake running along the eastern side of it. Here's a bigger portion. And Joseph comes from this little bitty tip of Malawi. He was born in the Nsanji district. And he was in Atlanta at school. If you go to the next slide. This is Joseph. He's my son. He's my adopted son in my heart. And he was in my congregation in Atlanta going to school at Georgia State University. And he was going to go on to law and stay in the United States, but he had this real calling to go back to Malawi to work in the Nsanji district, these five villages where he was born, and help them. They're very, very poor. The average income, yearly annual income, is $605. Compare that to your income. It's 165th poorest out of 177 countries. They have very little. And I learned about that through Joseph. And so our congregation, the next slide, we sent them all these clothes. Joseph had a container going back. He's supported by and helped by Ambassador Andrew Young. And he was able to get a container through Ambassador Young, and we shipped lots and lots of clothes. Almost our whole friendship room was filled with clothes and shoes and toys and stuff, and got sent back. And then we did a fundraiser with Ambassador Young as a keynote speaker, and we raised money to build two wells in two of the villages. So they were in between the five, so they could, all five villages could participate. This is a huge deal for them. They didn't have no running water. Because I want to go visit. And I said to Joseph, can I stay in the villages? And he said, no, there's not even running water. There's no electricity, no running water. He said, you'll stay in a hotel and I'll drive you down there every day. And but they now have water and are able to water their crops. He would like five wells. We raised enough money for two. So we did what we could. And the next one, and then these are some of the kids, not real clear, but just some of the kids. Their faces are just so incredible. And they're so happy with having almost nothing. And so, you know, my dream is to, I have a nonprofit that I started called Love Malawi. And those of you who were here for my interview, you heard all about this. And if you're on the nominating or the search team, you heard me talk about it in my phone interview. But I have a nonprofit, Love Malawi, and they need basic needs like mosquito nets and animals for farming and just basic food. Last year, Joseph emailed me, we in communication quite often, and he said we had our first death due to starvation, an older gentleman. And I thought, there's something we can do. There's something we can do. And my commitment was to help him, is to help him raise money to build an orphanage, a clinic, and a school. He's got 10 acres that he was able to purchase with the help of Ambassador Young, and then we want to try to raise the money to at least to get the orphanage and get kids off the street. And so this is my pet. And what I have today, in August when I went back to Atlanta, Bill and I, we were able to see Joseph. He happened to be fly. He flew from Malawi, and he was speaking at Georgia State University, and we met with him. And he gave me, he said, I got a gift for you from the people in the villages. They really want you to come. And so they've sent all these necklaces. He gave me this huge box. I had to take it to the postal, UPS store, and they had to box it up. 85 pounds of necklaces. I don't know. He goes, I hardly brought any clothes back because I put them all in my suitcase. So they have all these necklaces, all different kinds and colors and whatnot that they made. And they actually sent them because they wanted to help raise money for me to fly to Malawi to see, they want to meet me. And I said, well, no, I said, I can afford that flight. These people, I'm going to, all the money that I raise will go to mosquito nets and animals and basic food supplies. So I have a whole bunch of their necklaces. This is just a teeny little portion of this big box, that if you feel so moved to, you know, to donate. I don't have any price tag on them. I'm going to let you do your own price tag. And if you would like to do a donation, Pat can take credit cards in the church. Everything's, if you make a check out, it's to Unity of Bellevue. We're starting a fund here. And I told the board when I got here that this is one of my pet projects. And I wanted to introduce it. And I know I've told a lot of you about it, and you were excited. So I want to start doing something. You know, do what you can with what you've got, with the time you've got, and where you are. So we're going to do what we can to help these people in Malawi. And if you're so moved to help, stop by the table. Bill will be out there, and I'll be there as soon as I can. But I just want to thank you so much for your increased and ongoing generosity. And let's see what we can do. Together, we can accomplish a lot. Loving God and loving others.